what are you going to plan to play on your recital?
It will be a very eclectic program, starting with the Beethoven Sonata, The Hunt, Opus 31, Number 3, and followed by two Chopin Nocturnes. And then there's a Bartok's Out of Doors after that. And there's a movement called The Chase for the last movement of that piece. And I hope there's a little interplay between Beethoven's Hunt and Bartok's The Chase, which is, you know, similar in idea, but of completely different nature. And so that's the first half. Second half is Rachmaninoff-inspired pieces. There's three Rachmaninoff melody transcriptions, starting with Rachmaninoff Earl Wild transcription of Dreams, followed by Gershwin's that tune, The Man I Love, also transcribed by Earl Wild, and Rachmaninoff's Vocalise, transcribed by Earl Wild. So these are three Earl Wild transcriptions, followed by the Rachmaninoff Second Piano Sonata.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's a very adventurous program.
It's nice to mix things up. I've appreciated hearing, you know, older music like Scarlatti that you've recorded, and newer music like Beau Currier, you know, having, you know, these sort of pieces on there. Is it fun to mix these sort of styles up?
Yeah, I think it's the recital programming process is, you know, it's a fun process gathering pieces from such a great selection that we can work with, we have access to. And my logic for recital programming is often, you know, putting together pieces in an unusual way, in an eclectic and, you know, sort of a surprising way for the listeners to hear each piece in a different light, or if it's for the first time, because of the order and the selection that I've given, they're able to listen to each piece as if it were highlighted, rather than just one following the other. So I think having the great range of who Rachmaninoff is for the second half really is a big bullet point for the second half of the recital. There's that great nostalgic melody, but also a very a musical texture that only Rachmaninoff creates. And the second sonata is a great example of that that passion on the verge of hysteria. It's an unusual Rachmaninoff in that it's, for, in many ways, because it was edited so many times, it can seem very schizophrenic. It has sort of a Jekyll and Hyde living inside it. And that's such a different portrait from what we get in his songs written for the voice and piano, transcribed to solo piano. So it's sort of a, I hope that is sort of a collage in one composer for the second half. And the first half is just pieces that you would never really put together. But I hope that playing the Chopin Nocturne after the Beethoven Sonata 31-3, which is missing a slow movement, would satiate that hole that some people really like in Beethoven Sonata. And rather than hearing it as a nocturne, you'll actually it will sort of have a greater meaning because the lengthy sonata beforehand did not carry any of that slow, beautiful singing melodies of the slow movement. So
yeah,
it's different things. Hopefully, just somehow, illuminating each other.
I know all of these guys are, you know, were certainly tops in their time. I mean, if you think of Rachmaninoff sort of being the epitome of this, you know, late Romantic, early 20th century sort of style, and Chopin being so iconic, and Beethoven really and truly setting the world on fire. I always think of him as sort of a Shakespeare in music.
Yeah, I like that.
So it's got to be interesting to bring about all the different facets, because while Beethoven working in sonata form and Rachmaninoff working in sonata form, they both are certainly, as you mentioned, this doesn't have a slow movement, and, you know, Rachmaninoff changes sort of things. It's got to be fun to bring out these sort of quirks in these pieces.
Right, yeah. And I hope they sort of do resonate along the way. It's like, oh, that kind of reminds me of that incredible change that happened, you know, before. Just a little connections throughout the whole. Yeah, I didn't even think about it. I start with the sonata and end with the sonata, of course. I think that never even occurred to me. I like that.
Well, is it important recording? I know we've all probably enjoyed the recital disc that came out after Van Cliburn, but I love collage, and it's got, again, a whole sort of a wide spectrum in Schumann and Debussy and Currier. Is it important to be recording?
I think it's a tough process, but it was wonderfully revealing in many ways. I think it helped me really define what it is about me that really I want to put my signature on. It was a tough realization that I'll never be able to put exactly what I'm happy with on on disc. It's always you'll always be frustrated because the music is always changing, and I was constantly asking myself, is this my final version? And my answer was always, you know, I wish I could do it a few more times. But at the end of the day, it had to be just an honest portrait of myself that day at that time in that acoustics with that repertoire that I, you know, I very much love, and that was that. I felt the need to really assess what I am and what I play and what I have to offer through music, because it, you know, the recording before that was so many years before, and I felt that I changed quite a bit as a performer, as a musician, as an artist. So I felt the need. It was a need, but the actual process ended up being a lot tougher than I thought, because it was so. I guess it was such a personal thing. I liked these pieces so much, and I wanted to get it just right, which is not really possible.
Oh, sure. Have you been to San Antonio before?
Yes, I played with the symphony once, and I was part of the series last season when I was performing with a violinist named Augustin Heidelie.
Sure.
So now it's great that I'm coming back and doing the concert alone. Although, yeah, it'd be great to go back sometime with Augustin also.
We're often used to nighttime concerts, you know, as a musician, you know, you were right. Saying, you know, you fly in, you know, from a festival or whatnot. And unless it's maybe like a Sunday afternoon, you know, we normally don't, you know, play during the day. Is it different to be like a Tuesday in the afternoon early, like 2?
Yeah, it's different. It's definitely different because there's no nap time. When it's a 2 o'clock concert, there's no middle of the day, and you know you sort of set yourself back to zero and that take that nap and wake up and go play. There's you wake up and so it's like the whole body clock is different. And the weirdest part actually is not on stage, but when I'm done, I come outside and it's still bright up. That's always very strange, but. Yeah, it's I think as soon as I sit down, that whole sense of what time is it, where am I, that all of that just sort of dissolves. You know, it's just you come back to that same place and where your every move counts, and you know, it's like all the thoughts leading up to that would probably dissipate.
Well, we're looking forward to it. It's Tuesday next week, so it's really soon.
Yeah. Thank you so much.